Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. Whenever the Russians discuss their historical or contemporary relations with Turkey, the suggestion of keeping your friends close and your enemies even closer almost invariably makes its way into the discussion. Moscow and Ankara have indeed been quite sophisticated in managing both their grievances and their mutual interests. Can this approach make the world, if not the better, then at least a slightly safer place? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined from Istanbul by Hasan Yunal, Professor of Political Science and International Relations at Malta Pay University. Professor Yunal, it's a great pleasure, great honor for me to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, we live in such a fascinatingly confusing world where you have supposed allies that are pretty open and stubborn about undermining each other's security concerns. And you also have supposed opponents that seem to treat each other with respect and certain understanding. And I think the Russian-Turkish relationship is quite a quintessence of that. Do you think this relationship would have been just as vibrant or as sophisticated as it is right now if it weren't for the help of your Western allies?
The problem is Turkey is experiencing or has experienced over the last decades or so, and particularly since the end of the Cold War, but also during the Cold War, may be part of the problem. Yes, Turkey's posture on Russia and the United States sometimes change. And then sometimes basically Turkey feels closer to Russia, closer to the Western world. Well, after all, it's been a reliable member of the of the Western alliance, NATO. I mean, since 1952, it's been 70 plus years. So there's no question about that. But what it is there are certain times at which Turkey feels closer to Russia, in the sense that, for instance, as Turkey decided to cultivate good relations to Moscow in 1964, when it was rebuffed by the United States by a very notorious letter coming from the US President Lyndon Johnson, which is known as the Johnson letter in Ankara. Well, basically, it was about Cyprus, but the effects of it were wide ranging, and then Turkey basically decided to cultivate good ties to Russia.
I know that during the Cold War, the decision to cultivate the relationship with the Soviet Union was essentially secondary. It was an emotional and perhaps also a strategic reaction to the American rebuffal. As the relationship stands now, is it conditional on the West, or is it a thing into itself?
Well, this is what I was going to say, actually. It is not conditional on Western rebuff of Turkey. Basically, now what we have as fundamentals of the Turkish-Russian rapprochement these days, one is that, well, Turkey doesn't get along with its Western partners. Whatever is important to Turkey, we don't basically see eye to eye with the Western world. So the Western, particularly the United States project of carving out a Kurdistan of the Middle East, supplying the PKK militarily, the Cyprus question and other matters, you just enumerate one after the other. And on all this, what you have against you, that decidedly against you, is the United States. But in addition to that, there are so many other things. One dimension, I think, is since the end of the Cold War, things have changed. And in addition to what we did in terms of close cooperation in trade, economy, and the Soviet Union's building Turkey's heavy industry and all that, we have had flourishing trade relations with Russia. Russia is now Turkey's biggest trade partner. In terms of tourism, again, basically, in terms of trade and economy, what we have has surpassed any other concern. And the other thing is people get along very well.
What you're essentially saying is that Russia and Turkey have a mutually beneficial and to some extent a fair relationship. But still, when it comes to geopolitics, you are firmly aligned with the West, despite the fact that, as you mentioned, that Turkey has many grievances, security grievances, existential grievances with the United States and many of its partners. Now, what is it? Is it that the West doesn't understand your security concerns or that they couldn't care less about them?
Let's put beside what the West basically thinks about Turkey, because it has a lot of elements in that. I mean, what makes Western policy towards Turkey is simple, because we have a United States, which I call the empire of lies and arrogance in particular. Basically, the arrogance has taken new height in the last few decades after the dissolution of the Soviet Union. And the way they treat anybody, everybody around is totally unacceptable. For instance, they come and tell you what to do. And then you say, for instance, as was the case as the United States basically decided to invade and occupy Iraq. Well, I'm going to open a northern front using your territories, and I'm going to basically put my troops on everywhere in your territory. And Turkey says, well, you know, we can't have it like that.
And indeed, Turkey played along with that, not only in Iraq, but also in Syria, which I think surprised many in
everywhere.
Russia at the time.
Well, everywhere, because it's been quite an experienced country in dealing with the West in general. We are an expert. I mean, how they lie, for instance, we know it quite well.
Well, you know. Professor, you know, I'm sorry for jumping over and interrupting you all the time, but I think that's a critical question. You know the United States. You've been dealing with them for decades and decades, and yet for a considerable amount of time until very recently, you played along. You did what they wanted you to do, including, for example, on Syria. When the war in Syria began, or rather when the attempts to violently change the regime there began, Turkey played along with that, despite the fact that you had very good trade, despite the fact that the Assad government and the Erdogan government at the time had very good relationship. You had extensive border and many security concerns there, but you played according to the American tune. Why was that? Why did you stay with them for so long, despite the fact that they deceived and ignored the security concerns repeatedly?
Well, that was a big mistake on the part of the incumbent government, and I have been a vociferous critic of that since its inception. Well, again, even the incumbent government basically went along with that American policy, but whether it was actually the Americans who pushed the Turks, whether it was quite convenient for the Turkish government's understanding of the Middle East, as they were changing Turkey's tune towards the region and you know, coming up with a new policy quite inspired by Islamism and all that. And I think they played a role. And I think they thought, you know, what the United States is trying to do in Syria and what they want to do in the end seemed to be overlapping. And that was a big, big, big mistake. And ideologically inspired foreign policy basically wreaked havoc with Turkey's national interests. And that is why it was on that basis that the present government has been reshaping its policy in every respect. Basically, it is extending a hand to shake hands with the leaders of the Middle East, starting with the Saudis and then with the United Arab Emirates. It has improved its relations to a considerable degree with Egypt, also with Israel. And now it wants to basically get back to the normal phase of relations with Syria, something I have been very supportive of.
Okay, so it calculated that it was in Turkey's favor to follow or associate itself with the Americans and the larger West. Perhaps that made sense. And I think to some extent, Turkey's policy at this point of time is to also make the best of both worlds. You're still a member of NATO, but you're also championing for this new multipolar world. Now, before we discuss that second aspect, tell me, What are the tactical and strategic benefits of Turkey being a member of NATO, given the recent memory, for example, of the 2016 coup, which is a pretty shadowy story, and the government accused the West of being behind it? What's the point of Turkey being within that alliance, given that the trust it doesn't seem to be there?
Well, if you are not there, for instance, you can't veto Sweden's Sweden joining NATO. If you are not there, then you can't prevent South Cyprus joining NATO. If you are not there, you wouldn't know what's been going on there. We have all the officers and officials working and occupying high places.
Do I understand you correctly that it's just a geopolitical tool more than a defensive alliance for you at this point?
Well, it may certainly. I mean, if you ask the people in the street, no one would ever tell you that if we find ourselves in trouble, if we get attacked, we will get considerable support from NATO countries immediately, unless it is absolutely in their interest to come along and fight for Turkey. So that is why we are trying to build our own defenses without NATO, without expectations, if you like, that the NATO countries will come to our aid immediately. But at the same time, you know, you have one leg in NATO, why not? And then at the same time, you cultivate good relations to Russia, but also to other countries, including China and, you know, BRICS, anybody, you know, Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So why not? This is the multipolar world.
Do you think there will ever a point when Turkey will have to decide whether it stays within NATO, given that NATO, as you said before in other interviews, it's not a book club. You know, there are certain military obligations that come with it. Do you think there will come a point when Turkey will have to make that decision, whether it is within NATO or within the multipolar world, whatever it means?
Well, you cross the river when you get to the bridge. So you wouldn't know the circumstances. I mean, you have to know you have to have the circumstances first, and then you would have to decide on the basis of the circumstances. But I can't imagine a situation in which Turkey would be leaving NATO out of frustration or out of some anger or out of some grievances or out of a dispute with one or two NATO members. We have learned how to deal with them. Why not? So if they do something nasty to us, we can do something more nasty to them. But don't forget, I mean, it was a mistake to enlarge NATO that much. If you bring in more and more, there's going to be more and more divisions within NATO, and some of the cracks, like the Turco-Greek cracks within NATO, are going to widen.
Okay, well, there's going to be a little crack between you and me right now because we have to take a very short break, but we'll be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
Children at St. Anne's Residential School suffered nightmarish levels of abuse, torture, and child rape, and yet the Office of the Attorney General suppressed thousands of pages of police evidence that identified those perpetrators.
In this school, I was electrocuted twice. I was only 7 years old. It was too high for me, so somebody put me in the chair. Father Lavoie used to run over here after he abused somebody and run here and seek absolution and whip himself.
Some of them are my relatives that didn't make it, drinking themselves to death, overdoses.
But you know what it made me? It made me the person I am today, because I'm a fighter. I don't give up with anything.
Investigations were too often handled differently because the deceased was indigenous.
So many of the worst criminals got away. The bishops got away. The ones who'd done most of the damage never got charged.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Hassam Yunal, Professor of Political Science and International Relations at Malta Pay University. Professor Yunal, before the break, we were discussing the so-called alliance relationship between Turkey and many of the Western countries, and specifically NATO. But it is pretty clear that the Russian-Turkish relationship are not without their problems. And I think it's worth saying that our countries have fought more wars between themselves than any other country that Russia has had a relationship with. And yet, both leaders, I mean, President Putin and President Erdogan, have been managing to, you know, find a way both through grievances and through mutual interest, especially after that very perilous moment, that juncture point in 2015, I think, when the Turkish military, guided by a different vision of foreign policy, as you pointed out, shot down the Russian fighter jet, killing the pilot, which led to the death of the pilot. Now, can I get your broader view on this relationship? Why do you think it's been managed the way it's been managed? And do you think that's a good model for any other countries?
Well, it has certainly been an exemplary relationship. What remains at the center of the relationship is national interest. It is Russia's national interest, Turkey's national interest are overlapping. Now, for instance, during the Cold War, we had good relations for about a couple of decades or so, and it was all economic. But now, as you have pointed out, Turkey and Russia have finally realized that they should actually have a consultation mechanism about political matters. Now, political relationship and political consultation, I think, is important. So you get together. For instance, we had the Azerbaijani-Armenia war in 2020, but it didn't basically tear apart the Turkish-Russian rapprochement, which is important. So supposedly, Armenia is backed by Russia and Azerbaijan is backed by Turkey, but you know, the two countries, the two capitals, have managed the relationship, and President Putin came out several times and said, you know, those territories on which the fighting was going on all belong to Azerbaijan. So what do we say about that? So they understand each other now.
Wait a second, they understand each other, but I think they understood each other prior to 2015 when that tragedy with the jet happened. What was the turning point in the Turkish reasoning? Because I think the Russian policy vis-a-vis Turkey is pretty much the same, but it's, I take it from your writing, that it's the Turkish policy vis-a-vis both Russia and its broader positioning within Eurasia has changed.
Well, I think the ideologically inspired policy was, had to be basically put aside, because you can't make any progress with that policy, and they have realized that it was a big mistake. Plus, as you pointed out, for instance, there was the coup. There were infighting within the government. And there were, you know, these sort of problems, and all led to a, how shall I say, ironing out process of what we are doing, basically. And then in the end, the Turkish state was able to see through the American plans. For instance, in Syria, they were trying to divide up Syria into three parts, using ISIL as an excuse. And once Turkey and the Turkish state establishment realized that, then you have a turning point in all that. There was disappointment with the American government. There was disappointment with others. But in the end, the real basis of national interests of Russia and Turkey brought the two countries on the same track. Now that we have there. And I think there are also fundamentally important dimensions to the relationship. One is that Turkey doesn't perceive Russia as a foe, as it used to during the Cold War. The Cold War was a different period. And now the two countries are even cooperating on military, military matters. And if we see Turkey and Russia producing high-tech quality weapons in the next few years or in the next decade or so, I wouldn't be surprised.
There are still many very, very difficult issues and uncertain themes. The interests of Russia and the interests of Turkey do not overlap. They, in fact, conflict. And yet, one of the aspects of this relationship, I think, is trust. And President Putin has spoken about that a number of times. He said that, for example, President Erdogan is a man who drives a very hard bargain. He is a tough negotiator. But once an agreement is reached, it can be trusted. And this is a somewhat antiquated notion, calling somebody a man of the word. But I think it's important for both leaders. Is it taken positively in Turkey? Because I know for many of our friends in the West, in the liberal circles, that would be seen as somewhat offensive to call somebody a man and to say that his word could be trusted.
Well, it sometimes comes under the criticism by the opposition, by the liberals, as you put it, in Turkey too. And but the liberals have lost much of their prestige in this country, so they have hardly to be trusted, pardon me. And on the other hand, yes, there is a relationship on the basis of leader to leader, but this is, it is important, but it may be, it may seem to be quite fragile to the outsider. But what I'm here arguing for is that what basically has brought Turkey and Russia on this track is their interest.
But Professor Yunal, is that interest, national interest of Turkey, understood in the same way by the opposition? We all know about the upcoming elections in Turkey. Do you expect any sort of continuity of foreign policy, including on the issue of Russia, if the opposition comes to power?
Well, I think the opposition leader was on record once saying that Turkey should take Ukraine's side in the war. But you see, when you basically get to this government, when you come to power, then it would be a different kettle of things. It would be a different kettle of fish. I mean, what do you mean by taking Ukraine's side? For instance, does that mean you are going to turn against Russia? Or does that mean, you may be just empty platitude you would be just saying in one international conference, in one international meeting in NATO or what have you? Or, for instance, the most important question would be, are you going to apply all the sanctions to Russia? If you do, then you are going to be dead meat. You are going to be very, very, in a very difficult situation. I mean, we have experienced that with Iraq, with the United States. In the Iraqi crisis, the United States basically pushes you into something, and then you expect that you would be basically reimbursed by the United States and by the collective West for your losses, and then nothing comes along.
And there's one more factor, I think, that needs to be kept in mind. The overall landscape, geopolitical landscape of the region is changing, as I'm sure you heard about this Chinese brokered deal between the Iranians and the Saudis. And many of the experts I've spoken to, they have great hopes for not only the Syrian resolution, successful Syrian resolution, but also the dissolving of the Palestinian problem and, the successful conflict resolution on many fronts. But there is one big question there. If that happens, if those positive trends continue, what it would essentially mean is not only the end of the U.S. dominance, but effectively the lack of the U.S. interference in the region. Do you think the Americans will allow that to happen, or do you think they may use various events, including elections in certain countries, to continue stirring the pot and continue with that divide and conquer policy?
Well, I think what matters here is the feelings of the people. As far as the Turkish people are concerned, if you ask, all the polls show that there is enormous degree of grievances against the United States, and it is not only in Turkish-American relations. For instance, you ask people who is at fault, for instance, who is in the wrong, who is in the right in the Ukraine crisis, they would say it must be the Americans. Okay, it comes automatically. So that is why the opposition leader basically uttered that statement once and then stopped that, because you can't go against the people's wishes. So in that sense, I'm quite firm in my my argument that Turkish-Russian relations will remain on this track. And whether or not the opposition is going to win the elections remains to be seen.
Now, can I ask you one last question? You wrote that in this new multipolar world, middle powers like Turkey will have a special place. And you also suggested that if the European Union doesn't survive, that our European neighbors like France, Germany, Italy, perhaps Great Britain, those countries that used to be great European powers, will also have to come up with some sort of self-interested foreign policy. Isn't that too optimistic? Do you think they still have a capacity of conceptualizing self-interested policy, let alone executing it?
Well, the new multipolarity is going to be very interesting to watch. If we live long, you know, it's going to be really, really interesting to follow. One is that this multipolarity is not going to be Western-centered, because there is China, there is Russia, and there are also powers like superpowers or potentially superpowers like India, Brazil, and others. So the Western-dominated multipolar or bipolar or unipolar world order is coming to an end. And the second thing is, for the first time in a multipolar world order, there are going to be countries like middle powers, like Turkey, Iran, and quite a number of others, as you mentioned, perhaps European powers. Even if European Union basically survives all the pressures of the multipolar world order, it is not going to be a very closely integrated union. We all know that. And quite a number of European great powers of the 19th century, early 20th century are going to remain middle powers within that system. So the Americans will do everything to stop that. But as we've seen over the last 12 months or more with the Ukraine war, they are not almighty. They can't stop it. And this is, I think, this is going to roll on along those lines.
Professor Yunal, I have to stop you here. Thank you very much for that. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.